Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to Movie Mavericks, episode 317. I'm Trevor Anderson. This is over to Jason Rugard, the man with a sultry voice. He's got a rundown for us.
Yeah, I've been known to turn some people on with this voice. I'll tell you that. I think I was turning you on so much you almost forgot the podcast we were doing there.
I did.
Yeah, what podcast is this?
I almost flubbed a little bit. I thought it was a special one. I'm used to doing the retros at this point.
Well, I know you heard the voice and you couldn't contain yourself, so it happens. Ooh. But this is the podcast, and this is 317. Welcome. We're off to a beautiful start. And we'll be doing a lot of trivia. We'll be talking this or that, and the movie game that we've been doing, as well as reviews for Get Out, Passengers, Dog Eat Dog, Amanda Knox documentary, Moana, Peach Dragon, and a slew of other new stuff. Also, trailers for It Comes at Night, Atomic Blonde, Baby Driver, Unforgettable, and Girls Trip. So stick with us. We've got a great show. But first, like we do, let's get into this trivia. Okay. I got two trivia questions for you tonight. I couldn't remember if I asked you this one before. So let me know if you already goosed this one. This director has worked with all the owners of the original Planet Hollywood. Okay, we're talking the big three here. Okay, we got Stallone, Schwarzenegger, and Willis. Who's the director? And for extra credit, name the movies. There's one guy.
Well, there's actually two guys, right?
Is there two guys?
Well, Simon West and Stallone, actually, technically.
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, the caveat is
they're all separate movies.
Disregard the expenses, yeah. Yeah, exactly, you son of a bitch.
Well, I know who it is. It's Walter Hill, right?
Right, yeah.
And I swear I don't know if we've had this question before, but we've talked about this before. anyhow, especially with Bullet to the Head, since we like that so much. But obviously, Schwarzenegger was Red Heat, which I liked a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of. And then Last Man Standing with Willis, which, again, is another really good one. Walter Hill makes some really off, weird movies, but they're always so interesting.
Yeah, those three movies by those men. In fact, you got that one right. So I feel like we've done this trivia question before because you never just ace it like that. But well done, sir. Well done. But you're right that these movies are all off, and they were all box office failures for these guys and some of their most interesting work in hindsight for all three men. So well done there. So I have a secondary trivia question for you because I thought you might get that one. Name the Batman. Which Batman actor? Let me rephrase this. Which Batman actor was once considered for the role of Jack Tavern in Speed that eventually went to Keanu Reeves? Name the actor. And he played Batman in one of the incarnations. Hmm.
Well, that is a tough one. I don't know, but I'm going to guess Val Kilmer.
Now, why would you say that, just out of curiosity?
Just because at that moment in time, he seems like he'd be the only one up for a role like that. But who was it?
It was actually Michael Keaton.
It was Michael Keaton. See, I don't think that would have worked at all.
Oh, God, that wouldn't have worked. That would have been terrible.
Val Kilmer really is the only one I could think of at that time that they could have really – and that wouldn't even have been good. Let's be honest.
No, that was a movie that was meant for – I don't think that movie works without Keanu in that and all the elements with Sandra Bullock and the way that all comes together. But yeah, no, Valen tried though on that. But yeah, it's so bizarre that Michael Keaton was even considered for that. Let's jump back into this whole box office thing. We haven't talked to box office in a while, but Beauty and the Beast opened up with $175 million, the biggest opening outside of the summer months. Absolutely mind-blowing to you or to be expected?
Well, wasn't that expected? I mean, big number, mind-blowing, yes, but we knew that going in, right?
They're saying it's Star Wars for girls. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah. I mean, I guess. I don't know. Does that just mean it's a good movie that people like?
Well, they said 80% of
although
the exit polling
been the last Star
that,
Wars movies.
Well, 80% of the people that attended it were females from 18 to 34. So it obviously had seen the cartoon. An old friend of mine told me that it was just okay. Taking that then that it's not the, you know, the home run that maybe some of these other ones have been. I really like the Jungle Book.
Well, it has mixed reviews as compared to the Jungle Book, which has a much which I'm confused at because the Jungle Book really wasn't that great of a movie. And it was literally just like a one-to-one rehash of it. So now it makes me wonder, what's the problem with this movie? You know, this would get a much like 20% lower Rotten Tomatoes score. How could that be?
It's unbelievable to me that Disney has found another way to get a $1 billion franchise by doing these
this won't be
live
the last
action.
One.
No, not with Jungle Book doing almost $1 billion. This
not with Aladdin getting ready to come out. And,
right, yeah.
And all the others
Mulan,
are doing.
I mean,
the
all
Lion
the ones
King,
the Lion.
Yeah, good God.
Yeah, you'll be seeing these for a long time. And Disney's box office dominance continues. Like I said, I heard a mixed review, but it sounded like it could have been positive on the more, you know, on the fence, but leading towards the positive. Okay, let's do this or that. Are you ready for this? You got your your fast action cap on here. I'm gonna throw these at you. I want knee jerk reactions. That's how we do it. If you don't know how we do this game, if this is your first time joining us, I throw titles at Trevor, two movies that are similar in tone, theme, style, actor, actress, whatever it may be. Trevor gives me a knee jerk reaction. Then we go back through it together and explain ourselves. All right, buddy, you ready?
I guess.
Okay. Red Planet or Mission to Mars?
Red Planet.
Striptease or showgirls?
Striptease.
Cop Out or The Other Guys?
The Other Guys.
The Green Hornet or The Green Lantern?
Green Lantern.
And last but not least, Memoirs of a Visible Man or Hollow Man?
Hollow Man.
Well, why? What's with the chuckle?
I guess he's like.
We're running out of film, bud. What do you want me to do?
Is this like the bottom of the bin VHSs that I have to pick? Like, you can have one of this or this.
These are like the movies that you would rent from like a Long's Drugs back in the day.
Yeah.
All right, let's go through this together. Red Planet, the Val Kilmer 2001 film, or Mission to Mars, the film I think also from, but maybe 2000 this one's from, Brian De Palma's film. Absolute shit movie.
Yeah,
Mission to Mars was terrible. Both of them sucked. News. But Red Planet.
Yeah, but at least Red Planet had the robot.
Yeah.
I don't know. But Mission to Mars was horrendous. I mean, the whole dancing thing and all that crap. Yeah.
I remember seeing it in the theater and just that opening sequence where they're at the barbecue and it's the one long shot and De Palma's all over the place with the camera. I thought, oh, this is already way over directed for what this movie needs. You know, this is not going to be fun. This is going to be, you know, what he did to Mission Impossible, but not nearly as successful. You know, bringing a very artsy style to something that didn't need to be a blockbuster entertainment. All right, let's move on. Striptease or Showgirls, a movie that was released a year apart from me. Demi Moore or Elizabeth Berkley? Quite obvious, right?
I don't know. It came down to that.
Yeah. Doesn't it always, my friend?
Those were the two. That was the thing that set those apart?
kind of.
I don't know.
They both suck, but I mean, Striptease to me is a little bit more enjoyable. Showgirls is still so so self-important. And I never saw the camp value in it that everyone else did. I just thought it was I think Verhoeven now goes, oh, it's campy. I love it. You know, it's great. But at the time, he really thought he was making a fucking masterpiece.
Yeah, I can see that. I can believe that.
What do you pick?
I pick Striptease.
Because?
I don't know. I don't really.
I don't know.
I don't, honestly don't have an answer. Basically.
Well, that honestly wins with me, son.
I don't know.
Let's move on. Cop Out or The Other Guys? Bruce Willis, Tracy Morgan, or Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell?
I said The Other Guys because I thought that it was just a funnier movie, but these are both like so horribly flawed. I don't know. It's tough to say that one is necessarily better than the other, but I did think The Other Guys was funnier.
It's splitting hairs, almost here. And, but I lean towards Cop Out on this one because I like Tracy Morgan. I think, this was his time to shine. And it was fun to see Kevin Smith try something and Bruce Willis in this role. What wasn't terrible for what he was doing. You know, he was the straight man, but my God, you listen to Kevin Smith's experiences on that, and it's just so horrendous. But it actually makes you appreciate, for me at least, it makes me appreciate the movie a little bit more that he got that out of it, having to deal with Willis being a dick.
I don't know. Watch his other movies, and you won't be so amazed that he got that out of it.
You know which one I'm going through literally as we speak? I paused to do the podcast here. I'd never seen is Chasing Amy.
Yeah, that's a good one, though.
It's got a great script, but man, it is so 1990s indie.
Real bad, yeah. And it has that look. It has that cheap 90s overexposed look to it. Yeah.
Like almost a little blown out in the lighting.
But for what it is, if you keep it in mind, like when it was made and how it was made, it's actually really good.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying it. I just keep thinking, oh man, this is Miramax in the 90s.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, definitely.
All right.
You should be watching that on VHS pan and scan.
I know. I feel like I should be, right? It has trailers for like Good Will Hunting and other things like that. Okay. The Green Hornet or the Green Lantern?
I said the Green Lantern just because I think that it's a funner story, but I did like the Green Hornet as well.
Yeah, this one is another, like I said, right down the line for me on that, because I do enjoy the Green Lantern and all its goofy awfulness. And the Green Hornet was actually a bit of a surprise for how funny it was. And
I didn't think, yeah, the way they did it, it was almost like what they're doing with movies now, where they're taking, and I guess this is actually more action oriented, but they're, when you look at what they're doing with Chips and Baywatch and really 21 Jump Street and stuff like that, this was kind of a precursor to that.
That when I saw Ant-Man, I kept thinking of the Green Hornet. Because it was a comedian taking on a superhero role and doing it with a wink as opposed to snarkiness like Tony Stark and those guys. Okay, we got Memoirs of an Invisible Man, the Chevy Chase, John Carpenter collaboration, or Hollow Man, the Kevin Bacon, Paul Verhoeven.
I don't know. These are so different.
Yeah, tonally. They're all, yeah. I always preferred Memoirs of an Invisible Man. I hated Hollow Man, even when I was... I just think it's a creepy idea that the guy goes invisible and he's sneaking into women's locker rooms and he's raping people and it's just, it's creepy.
Yeah, he goes evil,
right? Which is the underlying theme of the original story. I get it, but it's creepy. The whole I didn't like that movie at all. I never went back and revisited.
Fair enough.
Hated it. So what are you going with?
I went with Hollow Man, but
oh, did you? I creepy mean, I fuck.
Okay, though it's an interesting take on it.
It is.
But
and
it's
the special
not,
effects at the time were actually really good. Is what I,
that is true, but the tonality of the whole thing kind of brought that down, I guess. I mean, you're speaking about like the rape stuff and things, and that pretty much destroyed that movie.
For you know anyone, what destroyed
no,
that
no
movie?
One liked that movie after.
Oh, because it turned you off of the main character, but I was already so turned off of seeing Kevin Bacon's dick again. I mean, what's up with. I mean, is that like the Kevin Bacon rule? If he's in a movie longer than three scenes, you're like, oh. I got to get a dick scene in. He did it in like Wild Things. He did it in this. There was a time when.
Well, why do you think
fucking...
they call it a stick of bacon?
Oh, my man. Is that some bacon fat joke for you? Yeah. Okay. Let's go ahead and move on from that.
I don't know.
This is about as smooth as Vaseline.
Well, let's talk about Kevin Bacon's dick and your voice.
Huh. I know. You know what I mean? This is just we haven't done a podcast for a couple weeks. Can you tell, guys? Let's talk about some reviews here.
Yeah, let's do
that. I want to start off with the Amanda Knox documentary that's on Netflix right now that I got a chance to watch. You got a chance to watch.
I didn't watch it.
You did not watch it.
I never
I'm
did.
I'm talking
no.
about it solely. Oh, fuck.
It's all
right, I'm going to hold
you,
on.
Buddy.
I want you to see that thing before we talk
it's
about it.
It's that good? Right? It's worth it that much?
I just want to I just want to know if you think she did it or not when you see it. So that's going to be my streaming online pick right now. Huh. Amanda Knox documentary on Netflix. Check it out. All right, let me start off with Alice Through the Looking Glass. Just caught up with this one. It's available on Netflix right now, the sequel to the terrible, terrible film
from
Tim
Burton. Why did you watch this?
You know, the strange thing about this movie is it's not good at all.
It's terrible.
It's below mediocre, but it's still better than that first one. So that's something, I guess. But as I'm watching this, I kept thinking,
What about this was better?
They kept... you know, it was less obnoxious to me.
Really?
For whatever reason. Yeah, it really was. But
I thought it was more annoying. I mean, the whole time, the whole thing was just like a waste of time, really.
Oh, it was such a strained idea. And the fact that they kept Depp off screen for so long, I thought, man, he's barely in this movie. You know, and then he comes on and does his little shtick and it's a whole, and he's so creepy in the movie too that it's somewhat off-putting. But I thought really it wasn't nearly as... I don't know, out of control is the first one, and just maybe it's because I saw this one at home. And
I thought it was
one.
More out of control than the first one. You thought it was? I mean, the first one felt like it had more structure to it. This one was more like time is going crazy, and just reintroduce characters.
At least they found a character one. That I liked, which was the Sacha Baron Cohen character, the Time. I like the idea and the kind of the puns that were going on there. So at least I found something to enjoy in this movie, as opposed to the first one, I found nothing to enjoy. So, I mean, I would give this, you know, not barely 2 stars, and not recommend it, but still find an improvement over the first one, which was somewhat of a surprise.
It reminded me a lot of like Return to Oz.
Oh yeah, but Return to Oz was really, really dark. But I understand what you're saying in the fact that like they were looking for something to go back and try. Yeah, you're right about that. It kind of had the same look a lot of ways too.
Yeah, with the with the time, obviously, with the clocks and stuff
like
that.
I know what you're saying there. Yeah, I get it. I get it. All right, let's talk about Passengers. You just caught up with this one. Chris Pratt, Jennifer Lawrence. I saw it during the Christmas season rush. I really didn't care for this, but I saw it in a theater, and it sounded like you liked it a little bit more than me.
Yeah, I actually really liked this movie. The more I thunk about it.
I thunk about it real good, though.
I don't like it. Airs in space. Yeah, I did actually surprisingly like it, and I've read all the reviews. And the negative feedback, you know, the whole rapiness thing that people had with Chris Pratt's character, basically stalking her. And then, when he woke her up, I'm not ruining this for anyone. I hope not, but
oh God, if you don't know that,
if you haven't seen it,
yeah,
I didn't know it by the trailer, to be fair, that's something that they did keep. But regardless, she does wake up. Yeah. It's obvious. But you don't know the circumstances, I guess.
Come on, she wakes up way too late. All this is so preordained. I mean, I found nothing surprising in this movie at all. What did you like about it? The relationship between the two?
I did find it surprising that the reason how she was woken up, right? That was never explained in any of the trailers. You may know that it was coming, but you didn't know those would be the circumstances of that. I like the idea of dealing with the whole death sentence thing of these people being woken up, you know. Was it really a death sentence? You know, no, not really.
You didn't think the whole idea with the ship falling apart and the leak was just so, I mean, just a time filler in a lot of ways, and something that they needed for devices to give them a reason, like a running clock. So, I mean, to give them a conflict, basically. Because there was no
conflict. Because they didn't have, well, the conflict was with the whole thing of them being woken up. Yeah. I mean, so it was necessary for the ship to malfunction. But, I mean, if those people hadn't woken up, then everyone had a death sentence, right? I mean, that's what the whole movie really comes around to. And of course, they didn't. These people had given up their lives to go to another planet to live out their life there, right? They had already committed suicide in that sense. So I just thought it was an interesting movie dealing with all that. And of course, with the Lawrence Fishburne, I can't speak, Lawrence, good old Lawrence, when he woke up and he actually had a death sentence, and that was kind of eye-opening to them. Like, what is what is life in a way? Like, you're stuck, no matter where you are, you're stuck living it, right? You can, if you put it off, it doesn't help you. It doesn't, you know, if I sleep for 100 years, I'm not going to have a better life. Right. I'm still gonna have to live the same life.
Too much with the melodramatics of what was going on. I mean,
it worked. I thought the melodramatics worked, and I thought that the whole thing worked for me.
I liked the bartender character quite a bit, the Michael Sheen character there, and the production design was really beautiful. The score was nice, and I do like the performers, but even they were rendered somewhat kind of just hampered. I thought, to me, it felt like it was very studio mandated, and there was a lot of notes coming in and a lot of changes being made from what original idea there might have been. Obviously, I don't know how much interference there was, but it felt to me like this had been homogenized from an idea that maybe was a little bit more spectacular than the final product was. I didn't care for this movie at all.
What would that idea have been? I disagree with that. I don't think that this was homogenized in any way. If anything, it failed. Its biggest issue is that it fails to be a large scale sci-fi epic, right? Which is what they tried to sell it as.
But it doesn't have that on its own mind. It's a love story. I mean, it really is a love
story. Right, but they didn't sell it as that. And I think that's one of the reasons why it failed. Because if you watch those trailers, you get a sense that this is going to be something different than the movie that it is.
Yeah, there is a sequence or two, you know, they're looking at that star when he takes her in like the moonwalk there, the star walk. And they put that in the trailer front and center to make you think there was more action in it.
Oh, the trailer's full of action.
Yeah.
Which is not what the movie is about. So I don't know. I think that's a deeper movie than people are giving it credit for. And I think people are seeing some things especially with the whole rape nonsense that I'm reading reviews of on this, which is just wholly unfair and not really not quite as intelligent as these people think they are.
All right, let's move on to another one. Let's talk about Manchester by the Sea, one of the Best Picture nominees, and a movie that I was really down on. People couldn't understand why I was so down on it. I just thought that it was not that spectacular. In fact, I found it kind of bad. I gave it, I think, 1.5 star, maybe 2 stars in my review. What did you feel on this one?
Yeah, this is the movie where I like scenes in it, but the movie as a whole, I didn't care for.
Didn't care for it outright, didn't like, because I really had a strong negative reaction.
Yeah, it's not like I didn't like it, because I did like a lot of the performances and a lot of the moments, and I liked the idea that it was going for. But the thing that it loses is that it takes this main character, and his will is so strong not to give a shit about anything that it's insurmountable, right? Like, no one can change his mind to give a shit about anything. Even at the end of the movie, they
give up.
It's not even open-ended. It is open-ended, but it's a trick open-endedness to it, because it's not – because he said what he's going to do. Like, through the whole movie, he says, I'm not going to do this shit. I don't want to do it. I don't want to take care of this kid. I don't want to have a life. I don't want to know people. I don't want to do any of this. And then he gets bullied into, giving it a shot to do these things. And when they fails, he's like, so what? Who cares? Like, I told you I didn't want to do it anyways. And then in the movie, he says he's not going to do it. And then they leave it open-ended as if maybe he would, but you know he's not, right?
I found his central reason.
I don't get it.
The tragedy. I think the best scene in the movie is him when he's downstairs with the buddies and she tells them all to shut the fuck up and get out. And, you know, they're
that
kind of far. I loved that sequence. I wish the movie had more, because that felt like the only real thing into it to me. It felt like felt like a rehearsed stage play to me. Like it was like a guy would say something and I wanted to say acting, you know, behind it. Yeah. It's like. The problem is, I loved that sequence, and when they finally revealed how the kids die, what the tragedy was, I thought it was so fucking weak, just so weak. And I thought, that's what you've been torturing yourself over. And it's such a human.
Well,
thing.
I didn't think
I
that
when
was
he
weak.
Says,
wouldn't you? If that happened,
well,
to
I
you,
loved the line about I was going to go back, and I decided not to because I thought everything was going to be okay. I love that. I hated the fact that the wife blamed him for that. You know, maybe it's because I'm not a father myself, so I can't understand what it would be like to take on a teenage. You know, maybe it's a total not my movie, but I just really thought that this was a lot of staring off into space and being deep and quote-unquote acting by all parties involved, and none of it rang true to me. I mean, I felt that it was very stagey.
I mean, I'll agree with you. It does feel very stage play-ish. But I disagree that I mean, all that the emotional stuff in this, poignant is a very good word to describe this movie. And that's a watch word for me. You know, watch out for a movie that's when they say it's poignant, because you know it's going to be a piece of shit. But it works with this movie. It really is what this movie is. To me, I thought the thing that this misses is this main character has all these examples, you know, his brother who has died, in flashbacks, so they show him taking care of Casey Affleck's character after the tragedy, showing him the right way to be, right? What to do, like how to stand up, how to be a stand up person, everything. And he just glosses over all that. He remembers all of it, but he doesn't learn anything from it. And that to me was where this movie just lost me. Like, what was the point of telling me a story about a guy who just doesn't give a shit and will never give a shit? You know, that didn't work.
Achingly simple story that was giving way too much self-importance. Once again,
there were moments. I did like the scene where Michelle Williams had her big cry moment, where they met on the street and she had the kid in the stroller.
That was too little too late for me by that point.
Yeah,
I understand what you're saying. It was too little too late.
I can agree with you on that one. I did also really like, after all the stuff had been laid out, you know, everything that's happening, you know that he can't be with her anymore and she's with someone else and all this stuff. And when they attend the brother's funeral, she gives him that hug, and there's this look on Casey Affleck's face that I think really was like a wow moment, where I thought, well, here he is. He can't be with her. He's had this stuff, his life just ripped away from him like this. And here he is embracing, like being in a moment that's very sad, right? In the morning, his brothers died, but he's suddenly in a moment in the arms of his wife where he shouldn't be. And like, how do you, like, what kind of emotions, like, how do you even deal with that? And I thought that was a powerful thing.
In the end, nobody's better off than they started. Nobody's come to any sort of conclusion or realization.
The young kid.
The only person that's got a catharsis is Michelle Williams' character.
Yeah, she's the only one that's moved on. She's the only one that's put her life back together. But even the young kid just doesn't... I didn't even like that character. You know, he
just
doesn't
do anything
either.
I just found way too many scenes
either.
That you know, went on for no reason and had... What was all the bar fighting for? What was the point about the first girlfriend that he doesn't like? What's the point about... you know, it's like all over the... I mean, it's...
Well, why does he kick the door in and say that the kid can't be in there,
right?
But not realizing, like, how can someone go through life realizing someone else is going through everything that they've already been through, but not be able to connect that back to themselves?
Well, these are the kind of questions that someone said. That's why the movie's so deep, because it's asking those questions. No, you're asking.
But I don't think
it's confused.
Yeah, it doesn't ask those questions. Yeah. It just glosses over him. It just doesn't deal with them. If it had dealt with
very
those,
mediocre movie,
it would have been very good. Mediocre. Yeah,
it's the kind of movie that people go, oh, that's an Oscar movie.
I agree. That's why I say this is a movie that had some really great scenes and moments in it to me that I thought, oh, wow, that would have been amazing. But as a movie as a whole, it's like, huh? Say what? No.
I saw Get Out this evening, and I got to say, it is as good as everyone's talking about. Surprisingly, this movie, I was on the fence about a lot of it. It is a small scale movie. You can tell it's clearly low budget. It's only really one location, but the writing is really well done. The direction is fantastic in this thing, and there's a lot of humor in this. And I kept hearing that and thinking, where are they going to fit humor in? You know,
it's not in the trailers.
It's not in the trailer. And I heard that I was really kind of, and the first couple of things that were somewhat humorous or kind of jokey things that were thrown off by side characters, I thought, but it almost has a Scream type vibe in the sense that it has side characters that are trying to warn the main character of tropes and genre cliches and things like that, you know? So I just thought it was really, really well done, possibly a bit long. Probably could have got 10 minutes out of it, but it absolutely works. And it's a great idea. It's a very intelligent idea, a lot more psychological than I was expecting. I thought this was going to be more straight up people under the stairs. And this is more Altered States, Ken Russell territory than Wes Craven. So, but hey, man, well directed, well acted by everybody, and extremely impressive directing debut by Jordan Peele.
Yeah, so where does he go from here?
He could really do whatever he wants. I mean, he's got scripts like this. I mean, even the soundtrack is fantastic.
There's no place left but down. I mean,
I know, right?
Does he stumble after this? I mean, is this easily reproducible? I guess I would ask you, since you've seen it. No? Yes?
I'm a
lucky,
novice to this genre.
A lucky shot?
You know this genre better than I do, so I don't know how you follow up something like this. I was impressed with Don't Breathe last year, which was more of a kind of a crime thriller than a horror movie. And that's what I thought this was going to be, is, oh, this is kind of more of a thriller than a horror film. And then it goes batshit crazy, and you're thinking, wow, this got real interesting, you know, here. And because you've seen the trailers, you know what to expect.
He probably does. A different genre, I would imagine.
I think he's talented enough. I mean, to have seen Keanu last year and then to see this year, even though he didn't direct Keanu, it's pretty impressive that he can switch gears like that and is full of all these things. But then again, if you watch their show, you know that they could, both could act, they both could stage things that it put, you know, at one point there's kind of a mad scientist scene, and I thought, oh my God, this setup, the way this is framed looks like how one of their skits would begin, you know, the guy getting his head chopped off, and you're like, oh my goodness. But then quickly that goes away because this is a violent, violent movie too. So I think you'll like it. I know you like these movies in general. So I think did you watch Don't Breathe yet?
I still haven't seen Don't Breathe.
Get on it already. No worries. You did watch Moana though, and I want to know about this little Disney treasure.
I've seen Moana and I don't get it. I've seen Moana and I don't want to.
No Moana.
Does
more?
No
Moana. Oh, come on though. The girl that sings the little song at the Oscar got hit in the head with the flag. Did you notice that when she was singing?
No.
Oh, when she was singing her little song, and right at the peak moment where she was about to like give it her Taylor Swift moment and just go for it, think they were doing that big flag twirling behind her. It was her close-up shot. She got binked right the side of the head.
I wasn't paying attention. Yeah, I don't know. This is a really small movie. It's much smaller than I thought it was going to be. It's literally The Rock and the girl, and that's it. And, you know, the chicken, which is not a real character. I don't care if you have Alan Tiduk or whoever, you know, voicing it. It's a damn chicken, and it doesn't talk, so just go figure that one out. But it's just a really small movie. You know, they go out on the water and they go around. They have to get this gym thing. Then they have to take it and put it back into the mountain where The Rock plays Maui, this guy, this god-like, basically kind of like a Hercules-type guy. And he's stolen some gym thing from the mountain. I don't know. And it's like fucked up the world. And so now they got to return it. But like the ocean is like a thing unto itself, and it's like giving the rock. It's been lost in the ocean, and so it's giving this rock to Moana the whole time.
I'm already confused for a small Disney movie. let me ask you this though: you've seen a bunch of these type movies. Is this better than Zootopia? Is it better than Dory?
No,
is
this movie sucks, and I'll tell you why. Because it gives the stupid rock thing to Moana. It's like, oh, you know, basically it's like you got to take this rock. You got to go do this fucking shit, right? Because like
you
can do
journey,
it.
Right.
But it's like the whole, by the time you get through the whole movie and it's over, you're like, it's like the ocean could have just taken the fucking rock and given it back to where it belongs and not even involved any of these other people.
So it's a useless movie.
I mean, it's totally useless. It makes no sense. I mean, once you realize that, it's just like, what a waste of time. You know, and not even a waste of my time. What a waste of these characters' times. You know, you could have just fixed it, and then they would be living happily ever after, and a problem solved, you know?
It didn't look like one of the classics. It looked like it was going to be cutesy, if you get it, you know, but not like one of the must-see classics from the
Disney
House.
Works. You know, the characters always work in these, but it's so small that it gets really tiring, you know? You know, the Dwayne Johnson character, I don't want to help, you know? And then Moana's like, oh, we got to do it. And you're like, okay, like for an hour and a half, it's like shit, you know? And that's all there is to it because there's no one else in the damn movie except for the fucking chicken. So it's a bit much.
Now, in the same token, you saw Sing, another kid's film, because you are apparently turning into a daytime babysitter. and you watched Sing here. So let us know about Sing.
I did watch Sing, and I actually kind of enjoyed it. It's
just to show you're not a
silly movie.
Bastard, huh?
Yeah, it's a silly movie, but it is fun, and this has lots of characters in it, and it has lots of music, and I don't know, it's silly, you know, there's really not much to it. It's singing, but it's about a guy who as a kid fell in love with the stage, you know, and essentially bought this theater and is horrible at running it and just ran it into the ground, and he has this idea to have a singing contest like an American Idol type thing, and you see all these contestants' lives and things and where they're at, and they wish they could sing, but you know, there's, gosh darn it, they're stuck in their crappy lives, and along comes this chance to get out there and do this, and he puts together this stage play and everything, and of course it goes horribly wrong, but in the end they're able to write it, and
so it has a point,
fix everything, but
unlike Moana,
it has a complete story here, so it was almost like you know, watching Moana first probably made this a little bit better.
that happened
with another movie on my list here tonight too, but yeah, so it made this felt like more of a real movie. I went from point A to point B. I understood all the characters. I understood what everyone was doing. It was kind of funny at times when it needed to be. It was basically everything it needed to be and really nothing more, which is why it wasn't a huge breakout hit, but it was a hit.
It did outgross Moana, so if box office tells anything. And then we have Pete's Dragon, just to finish out your kids' film trilogy. Your trifecta of you know, you're gonna be on the FBI watch list.
Well, I watched half of Storks too, so
let me know about Pete's Dragon because I was interested in watching this one as well.
Yeah, so Pete's Dragon is a weird movie. I thought it was gonna be more of a movie, but this is a weird movie. This is a kid's version of Swiss Army Man.
Which is a very eclectic film there. So I don't think a lot of people have seen that movie even. It's an esoteric little
But this movie
there.
Has, it deals in the same ideas, you know, of an imaginary, in this case, not imaginary, but imaginary, being lonely, right?
Basically. I hated the original. Did you like the original, by the
way?
No,
it's a silly movie.
It's actually kind of freaked me out a little bit. I hated the hillbillies. I didn't like it. That movie and Darby O'Gill and the Little People freaked me the fuck out when I was a kid. I don't know why.
I think I can understand a little bit. They had weird looks to the characters back then in those movies. It's so creepy, and I don't know. They're just weird. I'm not a huge fan of a lot of the stuff from that era.
But this
Disney
is
stuff.
A good looking film, or is it just kind
it's
of
a beautiful
a
movie?
Strange movie.
It's beautiful, but it's strange. But it doesn't have much of a plot or point. And so it kind of, much like Swiss Army Man, delves into more of, isn't magic fantastic? And aren't we having a magical, wonderful time and everything? And it, to its credit, it does it much better job of that than Swiss Army Man. And it doesn't turn around and bite you in the ass at the end of the movie. Is it worth watching if you have an afternoon to kill?
Yeah, I don't. So I'm going to take your recommendation
on really
that one.
You really don't need to watch this. But like I say, a beautiful movie, magic, but no point, really.
Magic on screen, but really not magical for you. Then again, you're not the target audience, so maybe it did work for younger kids, the mystical aspect. But interesting, it makes sense then why this wasn't the breakout hit that I was expecting, along the lines of like The Jungle Book and things like that, and Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're saying it was a lot more.
Had far less of a story than those. I mean, the story is real basic, right? Has an accident, car crash in the beginning, and the kid's parents die, and he runs off into the woods and finds the dragon, and then they live together for a while. Then they're discovered by the ranger, and then they. And then the people capture the dragon, and then the kid has to help the dragon get away and all that kind of stuff, you know, and then it, of course, has the cutesy moments where the dragon comes looking for the kid because he's been found on his own. And so they take him in, and the dragon's like, "Where's my kid?" And so he goes looking for his kid. He looks through the window and sees the kid enjoying life with the family and sheds the dragon tear, realizing he has to let the boy go. He's found a family.
Oh, man, you're making me fucking cry on the podcast right now. I'm going to watch this tonight. Get out of here. don't talk to that Pete's dragon. And I'm thinking of Puff the Magic Dragon. That's a different dragon.
That's a totally different one, yeah.
That's a different dragon. I ride that. I mount that dragon daily. Let's talk about Dog Eat Dog, the latest Nicolas Cage fiasco to land on Netflix. It seems like Nicolas Cage and Steven Seagal got a movie coming out every other week on Netflix right now, right? This is, I think, his fourth movie of last year, and this is a reteaming with Paul Schrader. Did Dying of the Light with him last year. Anton Yelchin was in that as well, the late Anton Yelchin, and that was taken from their hands, re-edited, and they both, all three of those, Cage, Yelchin, and Paul Schrader, protested that film's release. This time they were given carte blanche, ready to run, do their thing. You got Nicolas Cage, you got William Dafoe, based on a book written by Eddie Bunker, one of the famous tough guys in the movie, spin a lot of stuff. And this movie is so fucking trippy and over-directed and grim that it's hard to get through. But at the same time, there are passages in it that are extremely entertaining and so odd, it's compelling. It reminded me of Nicholas Refn, Winding Refn. You know, I can't think of his the guy from Drive and whatnot.
Weird because name, yeah.
he makes movies that almost feel punishing and off-putting, but they keep captivating you. They don't do the Lars von Trier where they're totally off-putting. I got to turn them off completely because it's like a punishment totally. Whereas this is a little bit of a punishment and then it'll redeem itself. And Cage is doing good work here. William Dafoe is unhinged in this movie. I like him quite a bit. The movie is cheap. It looks it's got a very low budget. There's sequences in it that are shot in black and white for no reason. Like literally no reason, but it's just there. There's some surreal aspects, and it's grim. It's like I say, I told you it's natural born.
So what you're saying is, given Final Cut, it still makes a shitty movie?
Yeah, but it's just, you know what? He's made shittier movies. I mean, he had that one with Lindsay Lohan and the porn star that went in the hills. That was terrible compared to this. I mean, this is actually a movie in here. It's not terribly hard to follow, but there's a movie in here that has a beginning, middle, and end and setups and payoffs. So it's his best movie in years, but it's still a Paul Schrader movie, and you know that that's a very hard pill to swallow for most people. I just don't think he's a very good writer. And he didn't write this movie, but his other movies haven't been written all that well. I mean, they're all about men coming unglued, which is the theme here. So,
yeah, that is true.
it's the whole central idea. What's Kill Command? You saw Kill Command this week. What is this?
Kill Command. This is in the cross between Predator and Terminator.
Oh yeah, cause that's what the world needed. What is this? Netflix original or what?
I don't think this is a Netflix original. This was a movie that it is on Netflix now, but it came out last year, I think. It's about the artificial intelligence robots, like Terminator. It's kind of like a Skynet type thing.
Did this come out in theaters? Did I totally miss this movie?
No, I don't think it came out in theaters. Well, I mean, not in theaters in the way. Yeah, it may have come out in some theaters.
Yeah, this wasn't released.
But you know what I mean? Not like, yeah, not really in theaters. But it's about this group of
training exercise.
Group of soldiers who get called out to this island or this remote area to do a training exercise with these robots. And of course, and this is all given away in the trailer. The robots have staged this in a way to learn how to fight these army men. You know, so essentially the robots are the ones that called them out to the training exercise. And so as you can imagine, things do not go well for these guys.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a fun movie. As far as that, I mean, that's literally the plot. So that's what you can expect.
That's from the UK.
I don't know if it's British. People,
that's what it says here on.
I don't remember people having British accents, but I could be wrong about that. I don't know. But regardless, it was pretty good. They have a cyborg lady who has like some of the AI technology, whatever, in her head. So she's kind of there. There's that aspect of it where she can communicate with the robots in a sense, and like
throwback to Cyborg,
all that kind of stuff. Kind of not. I mean, it's really more like Predator with robots, with Terminators instead of with an alien. It's really the best way I could say what it is.
So they're not.
So it's just an action movie. They show up. They do the, you know, they do the training exercise. Everything seems to be going apparently well. And then shit hits the fans. Oh, the robots are bad. There's different robots. There's all the shit happening. Oh no, what's going on? Then they discover what's happening at this base. Oh my goodness, this and that. And then there's a final showdown. You know, it's real basic action movie. So if you like those and you want to kill some time, I thought Kill Command was decent.
Kill Command time.
Kill Command time.
Let's take a quick break and we'll come back with our Trailer Addict part of the show.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Okay. I'm prepared.
All right, our first title is It Comes at Night. And this That's is what she not, said. This is not the true story of my sex life.
That's what she said.
That's what he does. So this is
whether,
a horror film.
Whether he wants to or not.
This is
in right. His sleep. It comes at night in his sleep.
Jesus Christ.
I don't get what is the hell is this movie about? I watched this trailer. I don't understand it.
Me neither. You know what
there's a
up
door.
This trailer?
They opened a door, but the whole movie, whole trailer, the door's closed and locked.
Well,
I don't get it.
A family might be keeping another family hostage is what I got out of this, especially because I saw it in front of Get Out. So I thought maybe that's the whole, it's another horror
let me
film.
Read, here's the plot. Let me read the plot here. Secure within a desolate home as an unnatural threat terrorizes the world, a man has established a tenuous domestic order with his wife and son, but this will soon be put to test when a desperate young family arrives seeking refuge.
This sounds like what? Every other... That trailer didn't suggest that. That plot description sounds like that the Chris Pratt movie, hell? The whole nine. Jeriah, or J for Jeriah. What was that one?
J for... Oh, the Jeremiah thing?
Z for Zechariah.
Z for Zechariah.
There you go. J for Jeremiah.
I like J for Jeremiah. Yeah.
I like J for Jason better, but yeah. But It Comes at Night. It looked like the kind of trailer like The Witch had last year, which was a very intense trailer that didn't tell you anything. And then when I saw The Witch, I thought, oh, they got me. These sons of bitches. They Bill Cosby'd me.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing going for this is that it's an A24. But, you know, everyone's got to stumble at some point. And this kind of looks like...
Pretty sure A24 did Swiss Army Man, which you just mentioned.
Yeah, I know.
The Witch, which I just mentioned.
But at least they're doing weird stuff. I mean, they're bad, but they're different. So it is what it is. I mean, they do good stuff.
All right. Next, let's talk about Unforgettable, which looks like this should have been released in 1992, but now has been dug up for 2017. And this is basically a Fatal Attraction type film, with Katherine Heigl playing the crazed ex-wife mm-hmm. of a man, and she will not let him go. Her perfect life has been ruined, and she is planning on taking over and it looks like framing his new girlfriend, Rosario Dawson, for murder and all sorts of devious behavior. I like this kind of trashy stuff. What did you think of this trailer? I got into this. I thought, man, they haven't made one of these in a long time. Remind me of like The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, The Roommate, I mean, stuff like that. In fact, put Minka Kelly as the other girl. And I'm all into this thing.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't, I don't know. Have they made, they have made these recently.
They did Obsession.
Within the last Beyonce, 5 years, for sure.
No Good Deed. They can't do it for the quote-unquote urban market.
As I was just going to say, yeah, I've seen a lot of this for that. I don't know. It seems like an R-rated movie as far as these go, but... I don't understand how this ends, I guess. And I also don't understand what does the Katherine Heigl character get out of this. She's not going to get her husband back, but it kind of feels like the trailer plays it like she's trying to, but it doesn't make any sense. Is she getting revenge or does she want him back?
I think a little bit of both. I like the Heigl casting here, though. She's gone away.
She looks like a crazy bitch.
Yeah, her reputation as a crazy bitch looks like it's...
And Rosario Dawson seems very sweet and nice and all that. So yeah, everyone plays their role well.
Yeah, it looks like a fun little B-movie that they're slipping out into theaters, the kind of stuff that you would see 25 years ago.
The kind of stuff you'd catch on HBO and be like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, like The Crush, remember that? Or
yeah.
The Temp?
Illy, yeah.
The ones like that. We got Atomic Blonde, Charlize Theron, who has... You know, had a strange career. Oscar winner, numerous Oscar nominee. They've tried to push her as an action star multiple times. It has not really panned out. Yet once again, you have Atomic Blonde, directed by David Leitch, who's part of the directing mm-hmm. team that did John Wick, who he's now doing Deadpool 2. This looks like John Wick, does it not? I mean, does it have the same visual texture and fighting style?
Yeah, I think I'm into this movie. I liked it. If that's what they're going to sell it as, and that's what I'm expecting, as long as they don't, it doesn't seem like they're trying to pull any kind of a crazy story out of this. They're just is what it is, right?
If it's the John Wick style, I'm all for it. If it turns into something like Soderbergh's Haywire, which was an over-directed artsy
mess.
Yeah,
that would be bad.
Yeah, I don't want that. That's
me neither. I'm fine for a throwaway action movie that's kind of artsy looking, yeah, as far as action goes and stuff like that. Those are always cool and kind of neat to watch.
God,
but, yeah.
Give this Leitch guy or Chad Stalitsky, who did John Wick 2. They did the first one together. Let either of them or both of them direct a Bond movie. Give them one of the next Bond movies.
Yeah.
They've got the eye. They have obviously got something down here. They need to get their chance. And you're running out of Bond candidates. They could maybe make it fun. All right, we got Baby Driver next, which, like you said, is Edgar Wright's reinterpretation of
Driver.
Drive, yeah.
Right? I mean, it looks like someone set out to make a parody of Drive, and they wound up making a real movie.
Well, what a lot of people don't realize, since we talked about Walter Hill at the beginning of the show, is that he made a 1977 film that was supposed to star Sylvester Stallone, but ended up starring Ryan O'Neal, called The Driver, about a getaway driver, which was the basis for Drive and is now obviously the basis for Baby Driver, because Wright and Hill had a big interview together on IMDb about this. So that film, very good. This, on the other hand, looks so odd. I was kind of bored by the trailer. Were you? By the time
really?
This
I
ended,
liked it.
Did you? I thought the one clever thing in it was the masks, the Mike Myers mask line. I thought that was clever. The rest of it, I thought, man, I've seen this before. I know exactly where this is going. It just felt warmed over to me.
Well, I'm fine with it. I mean, it's I like this type of direction, this type of action, and I like this kind of movie, so it looks good to me. It looked different than, you know, just coming out with another Taken or something, you know. At least it's not Transporter 8. So so I'm good with it. If they want to do a couple of these different type action movies, I don't think these will last, you know. I mean, we're talking about like Atomic Blonde, Baby Driver, these John Wick.
Well, they tried it with Collide that just came out, which tanked.
They're just not going to work. You know, they're going to, I mean, Deadpool is another thing that's going to set something off there. And that's also, I don't think it's going to work. That's not something, these aren't things that work out in the long run typically, but it's interesting to watch because you do get a couple good ones here and there.
All right. And then we have last but not least, Girls Trip, which,
what the hell is this? Why did you put this on the list?
Did you see the Red Band trailer of this?
Was this one that you were? I don't think so. Why? No. Is that the reason why?
I saw the Red Band trailer.
What
and
happens,
I thought it was pretty
what
funny.
Happens on the Red Band?
Well, I just thought, you know, they were giving her a lot more shit. It was a lot more raunchy with, you know, she asked her about the dress and she said this was hand stitched in Guatemala. Did you see that whole situation? So it's basically it's about let's talk about the movie. It's Girls Trip. It's directed and written by the guy who did The Best Man, The Best Man's Wedding, and The Best Man Holiday and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So this is clearly bridesmaids, girls raunch fest for black females. I mean that's the whole. You see this movie and you go, okay, that's exactly what the intent and purpose is. That they, you know, everyone can play in the same gross game. Fine. I laughed out loud a couple times. With the lines, because when Jada Pinkett Smith, whose character is you know hasn't had sex in quite some time, they're going on a girls' trip to get her over some sort of bad breakup or divorce to get her mind right, and they have one raunchy friend who's the Melissa McCarthy of the group or the Zach Galifianakis of the group, however you want to compare it. And when Jada Pinkett Smith walks out in her very conservative outfit, she says, "This was hand stitched by people in Guatemala," and the girl goes, "What, people in Guatemala ain't fucking?" I thought it was a great line. Okay. She's telling her, you know, she was telling her about like hiding weed, and she hit it in her ass. I mean, you got the Red Band trailer is a better trailer. That actually, so I think if I saw the original trailer, it would have been very good. But you're not into it. I'm taking it. You're not down for this Girls Trip.
Not particularly. I love Regina Hall. I think she's absolutely hysterical.
So
but,
I love Regina Hall. Why doesn't she get more play?
But I don't know. I honestly have no idea because I do really think she's one of the funniest people I've seen in a long time. I just
even in Scary Movie.
I was just gonna say. I mean, Scary Movie 2 is half the laughs go to her.
Yes, I would agree. I would agree. No, she and her and Anna Faris together are a great comedic team. And you know who she gets mistaken for a lot is Taraji P. Henderson. They have some have a similar look, but she is a very, very funny comedian. And I thought that this movie looked fairly amusing for what it was. But as I saw, I thought, okay, this is, you know, you don't want to say the urban version of Bridesmaids, but that's kind of the idea here.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. But it looked funny as hell, the Red Band trailer. Check it out. Well, I guess it's going to wrap up episode 317, which we've done a meticulous job getting through and staying awake, you and I, at this late hour. We want to thank you guys all for joining us. We should probably probably figure out what our next retro is going to be, huh? Retro podcast. We got a couple of that we're throwing around.
Oh, yeah.
Should we throw it out there and let them decide? Put it on the Facebook? Have them... we'll decide.
I don't know. I'll wind up watching something crazy then.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how did you and I end up watching the new version of Annie? I don't know.
Right? But, yeah. No.
That's going to do it for our show. We want to thank you guys for your continued support. Check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, TalkShoe, or wherever else you may be getting podcasts from. Also, check out MovieMavericks.com for our old podcasts and reviews and for anything else you might have missed on the podcast. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com/warp9. Engage!